As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we will talk about the iconic Game 5, Kevin Durant's masterpiece, and then we'll be joined by one of the greats, one of the all-time legends herself, Mina Kimes, ESPN Nets superfan, is joining the Glue Guys today to talk Nets basketball.
Wow. What an episode. What an episode.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike Yearsley.
Hello,
Brian. Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic, get yourself behind that paywall, TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys. Brian.
Michael.
The Nets are
back. We did it.
They're back.
We had a special.
From the dead.
We had a special game, Mike. Something special happened last night. Why don't you tell us all about it? Do you feel like something special happened?
It felt like our new friend of the show, Bilga Abiri from New York Magazine. He went to the game and I was DMing with him before the game and I was saying, could be a special moment. James Harden's Willis Reed moment. It wasn't exactly that. We'll get into James Harden.
Complicated.
But the Kevin Durant performance, if you're listening to us now, you probably have heard it 1,000 times already. Wow. Yeah. Oh, real wow. Yeah. Brian, how are you feeling?
Good. First of all, Mike, how's Augie? How's Augie too?
Yeah, so Brian and I love to do a live pod after the game. We love to do it on YouTube. If you haven't been a part of that culture yet, jump in on the YouTube. We'll tweet out a link. Last night, after probably the most iconic Nets game since the Nets went to the finals, maybe even more so than when the Nets went to the finals, my 10-month-old decided to become all Devo on me.
Yeah.
Is Devo the masculine version of Diva?
D-V-X.
Think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And he was just coughing and hacking, and I was up with him until 2 a.m.
Just covered in baby vomitus instead of live streaming what was, an incredible game. But that's okay. That's fine. There's no, it's got to be done. And here we are now to celebrate what is, I don't know what else to say, except should we just bathe in the glory of it? I mean, we can get critical at some points about the whole thing, but for a second, we do need to just let the KD splendor wash over our mortal shells, right? I mean, we need to feel that deeply. Fair?
Yeah, I mean the thing about it is that there's so many different data points that you can pull out and say, wow, this was extraordinary, right? It's a triple double. It's the first, what was it, the first 45, 15, and 10 game in postseason basketball history.
They always adjusting
it's like one of those weird.
Yeah, they really levels. Wanted that to be 50. If it was a 50, it would have made it just real easy. That would have been very easy.
Yeah, the 50, 15, and 10 club would have been, there's only would have been one person in the club.
Yeah.
Kind of like my Dungeons & Dragons club in high school. But the...
Nice.
Not true.
Solid.
D&D is bumping. For losers.
No. Really?
To me, the iconic thing is the 48 minutes. I think that's the number. If you're to pick a number, the guy played the whole game. He literally played the whole game.
We really went to war. It felt like James Harden and Kevin Durant were like, you know, they had a going down with the ship Dido moment, you know, together. And you got to love it. I mean, so I don't know. We should get into the whole James Harden thing as well. Obviously, everyone's sort of talked about how, you know, Kevin Durant had a spectacular game. And that's been great. And that's been joyous. I want to talk about how great James Harden was in this game, Mike. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, well, partly.
No, you know, I'm in it because here's the thing about so I listen to Bill Simmons' podcast, and I do really love Bill Simmons' podcast, even though sometimes his basketball takes, they're different from mine at different times. But he was really kind of like getting on James Harden for playing at all in this game, and he thought it was a bad decision. And I was just like, I mean, the guy gutted it out. Yeah. I don't know how many, he played like 42 minutes himself in this game. Yeah. And the most important thing that he did was that just by being on the floor and being not active and whatever, he drew Drew Holiday away from switching on to KD at times or switching on to whoever. And his presence required acknowledgement by the Milwaukee Bucks. If he's not on the floor, if it's Tyler Johnson, then like Brook Lopez is guarding Tyler Johnson and guarding in quotes. And then the Bucks are allowed to put Giannis and Middleton and Drew Holiday and Pat Connaughton on whoever else they needed to and could have doubled the Nets. The Bucks were slow to react to the fact that James Harden wasn't himself.
They just didn't react to it. They regarded his three-pointer as though nothing had been happening, as though he had like all the lift in the world, which he like very conspicuously didn't. He was like basically dragging his lame body through that entire thing, which, I mean, like, you know, more power to him. It was awesome, you know, watching the whole thing happen and him sort of doing his orchestrating from afar. But, like, they were closing out on his improbable step-back threes that, like, definitely didn't have enough oomph on them to get anywhere close to the basket. Like, they were like, it's James Harden. We got to close out on these. And I don't know why. Game six is going to be really interesting. For a whole million reasons, but like, one of the top line ones is, what do they do? Do they still regard James Harden thusly? I mean, he is a sort of a scarecrow in that game that they like treated as if it was a tank. Like they were like, this is the scariest scarecrow I've ever seen. We have to do something. And like, they can't, I mean, surely they're listening to the whole media ecosystem. That's just been like, that was an insanely badly coached game from the Bucks through and through. And it really was. It was like, we watched it on Dirty Stream on Twitch, and I'd had a few high lifes along with the champagne of beers, and almost was in a state of disbelief the entire time. Cause like the first half was so unwatchably, like, dishearteningly bad. And it's, you know, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to fall. And they just kept getting jebaited into every one of our James Harden little tricks, these dumb little tricks where he's, and then he started doing his ticky tacky foul stuff to pretty good effect. And it just like, it just started happening, just started clicking. And even there was no moment where it was like doing my Howard Dean job, because I was just really quietly waiting for them to figure this out. And they just never did.
Well, and this is so Bucks. It's so Milwaukee Bucks, the fact that, like, I mean, the whole meme about the Bucks is that they never react to what's happening right in front of them. And that's what makes, I mean, the Nets, this series, the Nets could easily lose the next two games. KD could be completely gassed. The Bucks could actually now game plan for the fact that James Harden is unlikely to contribute in a significant factor going forward. But the Milwaukee Bucks show time and time again that they don't react to what's happening out in front of them. And the Nets, on the other hand, sometimes for good, sometimes for bad, like Nash is just willing to do sort of whatever it takes to win a game or to do something different to throw the other team off. So I've heard it talked about, like, with Harden being played, the fact that like Steve Nash as a coach should have said that he shouldn't play. Like, as a coach, you should tell James Harden, James, you physically, I mean, obviously when we saw him play the game, you can't do it. To me, it was a great move because Harden's presence impacted the game more than his 1 for 10 from the field, 0 for 8 for 3. I mean, he had like 7 assists. which is still like, that shows you how smart James Harden is, even he's bum leg and all.
Yeah. You get the sense too.
I don't know. It was, you know, like, I'm sure there'll be a great story written about it in like 3 months. If the Nets win the championship, it'll be like, that game will be the thing that propelled the Nets forward. Cause without that game, the Nets are down 3-2 going to Milwaukee, you know, then it's probably over. It's not over, you know?
To your point, though, it was interesting because, like, the system of the Bucks has, like, kind of become, like, a weakness of theirs, obviously, in the postseason, like, a lack of adaptability. And to your point, like, Steve Nash, like, it seems like we do more preparation for this podcast than Steve Nash does for, like, informing his players of what is going to happen. Because, like, Jim Stern was like, I didn't expect to play 44 minutes or whatever it was. Weird, you know, okay, cool. Like, weird that conversation never, like, popped up pregame, you know, never got a pull aside being like, you know, here's your minutes restriction based on the fact that you have this hamstring issue that's plagued you all season. You know, just went for it. Apparently, KD didn't know that he was going to play all 48 minutes. Nash is just, you know, he's just calling the full-blown audibles left and right. So, you know, that adaptive quality is good at times, but also we took a big, loan out for game six here. I mean, that's a lot of minutes to play for guys who are pretty banged up in James Harden's case. KD just seems good to go. So he's full-blown gamer bro at this point. He doesn't care anymore. He's sacrificing his body to the basketball gods in all the best ways. But yeah, it's interesting to see just how malleable Steve Nash has been to this point.
Yeah, and so Harden has been listed as available for game six. Kyrie and Dinwiddie are not available, which, like, we're still waiting for, like, the Dinwiddie thing to flip. I think there was a report, I forget where it was, but that Dinwiddie may come back in the finals if the Nets make it to the finals, which, like, feels like that's, if that is actually the timeline, like, you can't expect Spencer Dinwiddie to play basketball then.
That's
but
scary.
You know, this isn't a Spencer Dinwiddie podcast.
Yes, it is. The
funny thing about Nash's coaching in this game in particular, but sort of over the season, he's obviously not an old school coach. He's almost like the most cutting edge coach right now, where he is. Most coaches like a reliable, you know, sort of rotation. They like to bank on. They're the Steve Jobs school of there. Steve Jobs, the reason why he wore the turtleneck and jeans every day. Is because he didn't want to waste time thinking about what he was going to wear.
A lot of bandwidth.
He wanted to wake up, put the clothes on, and get working.
Yeah.
Okay? That's why Steve Jobs wore the turtleneck and the jeans. Steve Nash is not Steve Jobs. Both Steves, whoa, not the same person.
Whoa.
Steve Nash, he's picking out the button down. He's picking out the collared shirt. He's picking out maybe like a nice little blazer.
Yeah.
He's mixing it up. Every day it's different. Every day it's a different flavor.
He's spending time on Everlane.com. Potentially.
He's diving in on the essentials, yeah, but also like the premium stuff that they've got.
True.
It's kind of like, it's almost a little too expensive compared to everything else. So you don't know what's the difference. Like where's the supply chain there?
Sustainably sourced though. You know, you pay a little extra for that.
That's what they say. but what I loved about his, I mean, like the, okay, most coaches, Mike Budenholzer, for example, would have taken Kevin Durant out for various points of that game. The Nets could not afford to not have Kevin Durant on the floor. He was so essential to what they were doing. If he was removed for even three possessions, the Nets would have lost all three possessions. They would have been -6, and they would have lost tonight's game. Every moment he was on the floor. There was a moment in, like, I think it was like near the end of the third quarter, which is typically when the stars aren't on the floor anyways, where Durant gets like a three with like 35 seconds left in the third, and if he's not out there, the Nets don't get that three. And that was a small moment where, you know, if he's not playing on the floor, then the total trajectory of the game is different because of how close it was in the end. And the Nets finally overcoming and, you know, just put it on a spec. I mean, it was, it's like this weird thing where I've heard a lot of discussion where, you know, we're never going to forget the Kevin Durant this game, even if the Nets lose the series. And I agree that we won't forget the game. If they lose the series, you know, it's not going to be as remembered as greatly as like some of the other iconic playoff performances, and it's still the second round. But taken by itself, like how many times in your life have you seen a guy do that in the NBA in a playoff scenario, and where his team had like no one healthy and no one who could dribble the ball beyond him, And the other team was the best defensive team in the NBA. It was just an incredible, it was an incredible performance. Can't be saying enough.
No, it was great.
We're going to talk a lot about, Mina's going to come on the show, and we're going to talk a lot about game six and more about game five and stuff like that. Are there any other moments that stood out to you that you, I mean, there's so much we could talk about. Jeff Green, we talk about Blake Griffin, and we're going to do that obviously with Mina. To me, the thing that like remains sort of like the most interesting sub factor in this is like, one, the top line is Durant is amazing, and two, it's that like Giannis, like what fear do you have of Giannis in the end of the game? It's like basically none.
The whole Bucks strategic bucket is like a whole separate conversation for me, because it's just so fascinating how that organization is run and how they've let us stick our noses in there to this point. I mean, we really shouldn't be in this position. We like James Harden is playing at what fraction of his self is he playing at currently? Pretty
17%.
Yeah, right. I mean,
let's do the
pretty diminished. I know you love a percentage, so we should not be in the series in this way. And they've really stepped on a few landmines. I think, like, in terms of Nets narratives, I think, like, we were just talking about, like, Nash's basically just letting everybody like just die, like live and die out there in game five is an interesting, like, we're just like, we just, you know, we hucked it. We hucked our meat all the way the entire game. And that was like I would say it's a fairly ballsy decision to let James Harden do that and to go the distance that way.
And particularly like, the theme of this Nets team is that, oh, they're all superstars, and do they really care? Do they really care about winning? They just want to be in Brooklyn, make money off the court, play together again, and have fun. But they're all scorers. They're not gritty players. They're not the Knicks, right? No. They're not Julius Randle.
Right.
But this, I mean, like, we also then forget Kyrie's won a championship, Durant's won two, and James Harden has done everything he can. Besides, I mean, he's obviously hasn't been that great in the playoffs with the Rockets at times, but he's done everything he can to try to take the Rockets and be the team that takes on the Warriors in all those years. So this is a championship team, guys on the team who have won championships. Plus, there's still like the Blake Griffin, Jeff Greens, and James Harden who have won a championship. They would like really love to win one. You know, they would like that would be amazing for them. So
true that.
That game, I just can't get over. You know, part of the benefit of my 10-month-old crying all night, and me having to hold him in my arms, and just pat him on his back and say everything's gonna be okay, everything's gonna be okay.
It's
like he was like a Bucks fan.
Did it look something like this?
I was like, I'm so sorry, everything's okay. Was that I could be on Twitter all night reading and reading and just enjoy, just, like,
just
reveling,
balancing
in
your
moment.
Phone on your infant son's forehead while he screams in terror.
And then when
pain.
A video would autoplay, he wakes up. Yeah. Like, shit, damn it. You talked about this, about how in your dirty streams, about first half, it looked bleak. It looked like shit.
People were about to jump. People were looking to jump for sure.
And if like the Nets lose, yeah, they could blame injuries, but like shit's going to change if the Nets were, even with injuries, would lose in six games to the Bucks. Our guest is popping on right now. We're going to take a quick break. Coming back, we'll have Mina Kimes from ESPN.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back. And joining us on the show is, it's got to be one of the greatest minds on Nets Twitter right now. I guess overall NBA Twitter too. You know her. You love her. She's on ESPN, NFL Live. She's all over the place. Mina Kimes. Mina. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I was about to say, we don't know that they love me because I have alienated a lot of people lately with my Nets fandom. But wow. I'm home, baby. This is my fan base now.
That's right. What are the,
so I feel great.
What does that look like? What are the DMs like when somebody's getting nasty? I mean, is it proper nasty when they're like, you're not a Nets fan? I can't imagine that we have those kinds of splinter cells in the fan base.
Yeah, no, I've actually found Nets fans to be super welcoming and
we're hiring.
Awesome.
We're hiring. Yeah, for sure.
yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I was taping a podcast, JJ Redick's podcast with my friend Miro, who's a Knicks fan. And God, I just dropped like two different names. That's not that bad.
That's what you're here for, Mina.
It's Come context. Yeah. Anyways, and he was like, what can we do to get you to the Knicks? And I was like, why would I be a Knicks fan? I'm just one of a billion there.
Right.
In the Nets world, hashtag Nets world, I feel accepted, embraced, welcome. I love it. I was on the Jumbotron.
That's the thing that I love most about the Nets community. It's a very open arms. We welcome all because the boat is big and there's a lot of seats. It's like a Staten Island ferry, you know, on a weekend. It's just a lot of space here and we're welcoming everyone on. And you're one of the people on the Staten Island ferry right now with the Nets. Mina, what was your, so obviously we're going to talk about game five a little bit here. I saw a Nick Wright tweet, a very aggressive Nick Wright tweet. I know you know Nick. You have receipts for what happened with Nick. What happened with Nick? And tell the audience what happened there.
Nick Wright's made some real crucial errors in tweeting, which speaks to, you know, he really is very thick-skinned, and credit to him in our business. But he has sent me some tweets before games have ended, which, again, not smart because you know where to go but down, man. Like, if you're, you know, so he tweeted at me when the Bucks, we have this weird riff going on where he's I feel like a known anti-Nets persona 100%. Right now, and I think he started it. I don't remember how it all started. I'm like a lover, not a fighter, but he was tweeting at me, and then at halftime ish he was tweeting, oh, the two of the big three is here, which I also was like, dude, like Harden's like not even half Harden right now, we're not doing this. And I wasn't planning on replying to him at all, but then when things turned around, you know, I kind of went for it and did Sting falling from the rafters. I also was thinking about taping this podcast because I'll just be blunt with you. I remembered I was looking at my schedule at halftime just miserably, and I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about the Nets with these dudes.
Yeah.
And then when you hit me up afterwards, I was like, let's go. Like, I'll take this right now.
Mike, you should tell Mina what the plan was for the pod otherwise, because this is like one of the most glue guysiest sort of plans that we ever had.
Yeah. We didn't want to descend too deep into darkness. So like while we did not have high hopes for Los Nets when going into game five. So I had prepared trivia for you because I know that you're a person of the crossword. And I had a whole there. It was all like based on the Nets. Like, so it wasn't like what school did Joe Harris go to? But there was like a UVA question, right?
Actually, can you do the UVA one? Just want to know.
The UVA one is legit the craziest, the best thing you'll hear all day. Okay, and then I'll just do this one question. But there's all these other ones that I can whatever. Okay, Joe Harris is an alum of UVA. A fellow UVA alum is the namesake of a popular soda. What is that soda?
The namesake of a soda. So the last name is shared by a soda.
The soda was named after.
Is it one of the Koch? Oh, it's named after him. Okay. I wasn't the Koch brother. Yeah. all right. Can't be that mainstream of a soda.
Mina Kimes.
It's Mr. Pibb. It's Mr. Pibb.
Oh,
Mr. Pibb went to UVA.
That's such a good
really
answer.
Really close. Yeah.
Dr. Pepper.
It's the triple A Mr. Pibb. Yeah.
So it's Dr. Pepper, but this is a wormhole we're diving into. So I want you to prepare real quick. And people, I apologize. We're going to get back to the Nets, but this is a bit, so
important.
This goes a lot of different places. So apologize for all this. Dr. Pepper went to UVA. He was a surgeon in the Confederate Army. So the pharmacist who created Dr. Pepper worked at a drugstore in Waco, Texas when he created Dr. Pepper. And this is from Dr. Pepper's website. So I'm not making this up. They say legend has it that the person who owned that pharmacy named it Dr. Pepper after the father of a young girl he once was in love with. It's a very convoluted tale.
Yes, it is. It sure is.
So as you sipped up Dr. Pepper, that's the origins of it. So it was a lot of that. In case the Nets were terrible.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
But we're here now, and the Nets are great.
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant is amazing, and James Harden, Willis Reed himself into the game. So I have some questions for us. The first question is, when you think about that Kevin Durant game that we just saw, is there a play, an image that stands out to you, Mina? What's the thing that stands out to you about what you saw in that game?
I would say I was thinking about this actually ahead of Around the Horn today, because we were like, was this the iconic Kevin? I said this is, to me, like a legacy-defining game for KD and undoes so many years of narratives and... it's fucked up, but like he proved he could put a team on his back in like the craziest way. And then we were saying, okay, well, was there a moment in this game? And there really wasn't, because he like it was obviously wall to wall. Really made the push in the third quarter, but he did everything possible that you can do like as a basketball player. But to me, the one moment that stood out was when Harden brought the ball up and like was. Screwing up, it was like deep. I mean, there must have been like 3 or 4 seconds on the clock. You guys remember the one, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the hell was his plan was there, and just kind of desperation heaved it to Durant. And I don't know how Durant got that shot up, man. It was a three, but that to me was like, oh, you are at, like compensating for every mistake that every single one of your teammates is making right now. It was amazing.
The face
what
that
do
he
you
made.
Make, yeah. What are we?
Sorry,
what are we supposed to make of the Harden performance?
It's so confusing, right? Because the whole time I was like, get him off. But then like the Bucks kept guarding him. So I don't know, like not going after him.
How insane was that? The fact that everyone's talked about this, but the fact that the you have to recognize in the moment that James Harden is not himself, that he is a diminished James Harden. Okay. He's a pre-beard Harden. He's Samson. Mm. Right, it's been shaved, but he obviously saws it on. Yeah. They don't attack him. There was maybe three possessions the whole game where he got truly attacked, but they were more of normal in the flow of offense. It wasn't like they targeted James Harden, and on offense, Harden, like he made some really kind of wild decisions again for a guy who wasn't healthy, but he was incredibly important. I feel in the game because. What he did do was he provided like a 5-second rest for KD when Harden would bring up the ball. And then like Drew Holiday would be guarding James Harden. Don't know, like no reason why, the best perimeter defender in the NBA, but he was guarding a broken. So I don't know what to make it. And then Harden had a terrible pass. I don't know what to make of the James Harden game.
Yeah. I mean, it was, we talked a little bit about this, but the fact that they regarded him as though he was still just totally fine was total insanity. They rushed out on every one of his completely impossible threes that were never going to go anywhere and then let him D up like Giannis in the post, like exactly the only place where James Harden could do anything effective defensively. They let him go. And like, that was the best moment where like Shamet was coming over to double. He's like, no, I know. I've seen this.
This
turnaround, Jay. I had a premonition about this 30 minutes ago. I got it. Game 6, again, I'll be super interested to see what if any kind of planning they do around James Harden. I have to imagine that there's like maybe even just like an overcorrection, you know, then they like spin out of control on the highway because of how little correcting they did. But I don't even know what that looks like, I guess. I haven't seen the Milwaukee Bucks do any correcting at all in this entire series.
It was like I was coaching the Bucks and doing everything I wanted them to do. I was like, okay, yeah, take this, you know, fade away now. The Harden was interesting because I was trying to rationalize in my mind, like, why is he still out there aside from the fact that the Bucks were treating him like he was normal? And I got to think there's just some comfort level with Durant. And, you know, he got to take a few plays off where he didn't have to bring the ball up. Like, I think... given the fact that the man was playing 48 minutes, he probably appreciated that respite, and they probably don't trust, you know, Mike James or Tyler Johnson.
I'm glad they've stopped trusting Mike James. Yeah.
Every time Mike James gets the ball and does anything, I imagine him screaming Mike James, like Leroy Jenkins style, as he like goes to the cup. Mike James! Yeah. But great story. Yeah. Mike James. I've been a Nets fan longer than he's been a Net. But yeah, I think game 6 is going to be fascinating because – it worked in game five, but you can't play 46 in game six, and they're not going to let him hide in the baseline. Like, the stuff that happened in game five is not going to happen. So I'm really fascinated to see how Nash approaches things, because I think you're right. I think the Bucks are going to overcorrect. I think Giannis is going to guard KD way more than he probably should. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get punished for it at times, frankly.
Yeah.
And I'll be curious to see how many minutes KD plays, for example. I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to go about it.
I almost want Giannis to guard KD, because it's the whole like fouling issue. And Giannis, he's obviously Defensive Player of the Year and all that stuff, but he really doesn't guard like wings on the level of Kevin Durant. Like, that's not what Giannis does. Giannis is the secondary help guy. He's sort of that devastating presence around the rim and is obviously super agile and can get, but he doesn't guard the wings as skilled as Kevin Durant really ever. Like, he did. And it's kind of like, who do you blame, Giannis or Budenholzer, for it not happening during the game in game five when Kevin Durant's going off and Giannis is not on Kevin Durant? But there's a reason, right? Like, there's a reason why it's not happening. It's because, one, they don't want to risk Giannis getting fouls on KD. And two, because he's as great as he may be, like, there's things that he maybe isn't exactly the best at. And the thing that him guarding Kevin Durant for an entire game, it's thrilling to watch. It would be exciting and compelling. But I actually think if it were to happen, if KD got two quick fouls on him, and Giannis is sitting on the bench, game six is over almost at that point. Like, if they get fouls on Giannis, game six is over. Man, it's going to be so interesting to see, like, is Harden going to be better? Is Kevin Durant going to have any energy left? Mina, did you see what Reggie Miller happened to throw out there?
Okay. Reggie Miller.
I didn't see this. What is this?
He got owned by like Velveeta. Okay. I think they were like, take this shell. Like, it was so horrible. I don't like it when brands are owning people, but yeah, massive ratio.
So Reggie Miller put out there on Twitter, it was right after game five, and obviously we all saw the spectacular performance. Reggie Miller says, I'm just going to throw this out here to see what the responses will be, which he got plenty of. If you're Steve Nash and the Nets, would you sit Harden and Durant in game six because of the heavy minutes and push all your chips into the center of table of game seven? Brian, I start with you. Is this a sound strategy with which to follow through in game six?
Heard on Bill Simmons' thing talking about, like, you know, completely punting on game six, which I just don't think you do. I just don't think you do that, Mike. I don't know. People are seriously talking about this? Is this a thing that people are talking about? This is the second time I've heard it.
Mina, what do you say about to that?
I think that if it's the third quarter and they're down 16 points like they were, then I would consider pulling KD. Like, if it feels like the win probably has shifted so much that it's probably not worth it, you know, like pushing him, I would consider benching. But I certainly wouldn't from the jump. And with Harden, it's different because I think that it's less about time and usage and more about, is he a liability on the floor? We don't know. It'll depend on how the Bucks approach things.
You can't risk games. You just can't. It's like, you can't, in baseball, you can't waste pitches. You don't want to waste a game six. Like, regardless of what, you don't know what's going to happen in that game six. Like, Giannis could hurt his ankle in game six. And then what if Kevin Durant, James Harden are in street clothes, you're going to have them quickly change in the locker room and then come out and hopefully you win games. Like, you have to play it out. You have to play it out to the maximum, because you can't just like, you can't put 80% effort in to start, because then you're just going to fail. You have to go to the maximum. And then Mina, what you brought up, which is like 16 points, with like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I would push it even further, but then you pull. Then you do a quick pull and you just say it's over.
KD does not seem like the dude that punts on like anything. It just doesn't seem like a punter, you know?
Well, let me ask you guys this question. Okay, so game five, incredible. It's a gut punch to the Bucks, right? The Bucks had a massive lead and they blow it, and KD has this incredible performance. After the game, Giannis is calling Kevin Durant the best player on the planet, which if you're a Bucks fan, you don't really want to hear your best player say, but it's also true. Which end of the spectrum did game five affect more? Did it hurt the Bucks emotionally or mentally more, or did it drain the Nets more in that going into game six, who's at more of a disadvantage, the mental aspect of the Bucks or the physical aspect of the Nets?
I mean, it just comes down to the endurance of Kevin Durant and his health. I mean, yeah, dude tore his Achilles 2 years ago, you know, so I always am like a little, but it was crazy as like he seemed to be gaining power as the game went on in a freaking insane kind of way, which is why he's, you know, the best player in the NBA right now. So I think he has a pretty keen awareness of his abilities. I think it's weird. And as a Nets fan, I was mentally like already preparing for the L at halftime. I was like, this is over. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it was just gravy and excitement. I think you're more miserable as a Bucks fan coming out of that game than you are happy as a Nets fan based on what happened. And by that token, I think as a Bucks, like the Bucks, God, that's so demoralizing in every way. I mean, you know what adjustments you have to make, like we discussed, but how can you look Giannis in the eye after he cowardly ran away from or Bud, man, like, geez, Louise, that's got to kill.
Oh, so I don't want to get too personal, but Bud, there's something about, he is Andy Richter vibes. He's Andy Richter with the beard vibes that I'm seeing, which is interesting to me. But what is the greatest sin in the game, though? Is it that the Bucks were not attacking Harden, or was it Giannis?
Yes.
Yeah. Giannis not guarding
it's
KD.
The Harden thing. Harden, dude, Harden. I could have attacked Harden. Yeah. I have never made a basket, but I mean, maybe like in like fourth grade. Yeah. But anyways, like, dude, what was like? Dude, literally was on one leg.
Yeah. I mean, just put him on the perimeter, put him on an island, do something other than just go, like, going to him at the post. It's just it's so fascinating. Honestly, like, when you think about who's in charge of making these decisions and they're like pouring over, like, I imagine there's teams of people that pour over footage of this stuff and they're like, what do they say? What are they looking at each other and saying to each other today? Like, that went, like, how do you not call that number? And this is the thing with, like, Giannis, too. There's like, as I've been watching this series, a lot of interesting sort of picadillos with him. And it seems like whenever he calls audibles, which he does do, it's always like the wrong one. It's just like it's never the right moment to do that thing that he wants to do. And it's like, I don't know if it's
taking a three with 15 seconds left. How, not a good idea.
How is it that he's never been sort of like somebody's grabbed him and been like, hey, like, you're really talented. You could be the best of the world. Like, if you just trim the fat here and there and, you know, these couple of things, and you're going to be really, really, it's going to be gravy. And he just, I guess, doesn't, nobody's had that relationship with him.
For years, they were all just kissing up to him and trying to get him not to leave.
Yeah,
you
just
know?
Hiring but his brothers.
I mean, Bud, like, you said he looks like Andy Richter. To me, whenever they cut to him on the sidelines, he always looks like a dad who's been asked to like braid his daughter's hair. Like, he's so befuddled and like, oh fuck. Like, don't die.
That's great.
Coming home soon. You know, like, I just pity him out there, man. Like, it's gotten to the point. And meanwhile, it's our guy, Nash, cool,
our guy.
Calm.
He's our guy.
Hugging. Like a hugger.
Yoga vibes. There he goes. Crushing TikTok dances. Yeah.
Stern,
great hair.
Stern hugs. A stern hugger. You know,
how do we feel about the post game, Brian? If people are on YouTube seeing this video right now, what do people think of the seminal image,
you know, just two guys.
The Nash hug was a beautiful moment. It really was like he was representing the fan base at the moment, being like, thank God, Kevin, thank you. Thank you for saving us from the depths of embarrassment. Geez, Steve Nash, incredible. I do have a question though about the Bucks, which is like, what's your percentage of win? I'm not gonna, like, obviously, does it feel like we can categorize in this way: overwhelming favorite, slight underdog, or overwhelming underdog? What bucket are the Bucks? Like, should the Nets be going to this game feeling confident that they're gonna win, or should it feel more of like the Reggie Miller school of thought, which is like, Game Six is probably probably a wash. It's like it's gonna be over.
Just
and then
it
we'll
out
go
there.
Game seven. Yeah.
Anytime you start a tweet with just throwing it out there, don't tweet it. Don't finish the tweet. Yeah. I think the Nets should be slight favorites now, which in a normal scenario, any team that's up with one left would be major favorites. But Kevin Durant's not going to, Harden's not going to be better in 2 days, you know? So I think just given the Herculean effort from KD and our patron saint Jeff Green, I think they're up against it. Although hopefully Joe Harris remembers how to shoot, so that could also, you know, work in their favor too.
That's
Joe Harris is such a sensitive subject because he, as a longtime Nets fan, you know this. It's that he was
he's OG.
He's the guy. He's the connective tissue between those disastrous years post Billy King transitioning into this current era. And he's the guy that the Nets fans hold on to so closely. And he has been horrible. He's been horrible. And you can't expect it to continue. You'd hope it wouldn't continue, but he's just been so – it's just – if he's different, then I actually think Game 6 is possible. Like, I do think that's a possible win. Before we get out of here, you said slight favorite for the Nets. Tell us how the series is going to go, Mina. Lay it out for us.
Well,
Game 6 and then Game 7. If Game 7's even going to happen, what's going to happen for us?
I think I did say Nets and 7. This is before Kyrie got hurt. I thought the Bucks would be better.
Yeah.
Just to be honest. Fair. But I think that the Nets drop the next one and then win at home. I don't see Milwaukee coming into our house and winning.
Yeah.
So that I would say Nets and 7.
Are you going to get flown out to one of the
ethical issues with with ESPN? I don't think so. If you're listening, you know, Bob Chapek, CEO of Disney, I know he's a big glue guy.
Doing a great job. He's doing a great job.
Yeah. Send me out. I'm ready. Nets world.
Yeah. You can do that. You can descend from the rafters like Sting and it just come down.
Wearing Nick the Wright makeup. Will be there. I can land right on him. You know?
He does.
Is he the biggest Nets
games.
Hater? Is he the number one Nets hater out there? Who else is
he's
there?
Risen to prominence.
Besides all of Knicks fans, yeah. Besides like all the massive.
That's sad though. You know what? Let's get into this. Mm. Let's mix it up on this. Cause Knicks, they're always like, nobody likes the Nets. Like the Nets are, no one cares about them. You do.
Yeah.
It's like when people on Twitter are like, no one cares because if you like tweet about women's sports or something. And it's like, clearly you care. Like you literally just disproved that no one cares by caring. Like if you're punching, you're punching down. So
that,
you know,
cognitive dissonance is so extreme. I don't know what it is about that specific kind of fandom, but like the screaming like fuck Brooklyn or like we want Brooklyn next chance outside and then like you guys we're rent free in your heads, like flipping, like just gaslighting everybody so quickly, like what's happening here?
Yes.
We weren't the ones extremely. Chanting. What's happening?
We weren't saying we want Madison Square Garden.
Rent free. A lot of rent free.
Sure, our owner maybe has ties to the government, but your owner is it's Jim Dolan, so
a beautiful musician, you know, in his own right.
He's just really dancing around and stuff there.
Are there any good owners?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's
no.
Usually, that's why it's like I never say there are no like all fans are bad and all owners are bad. Like, there's no good. Fan base or ownership. I need a new pet play, like a player to obsess over though, because Claxton, you know, I feel like he's kind of
he's in foul trouble.
Falling off
he's
a little
he's
bit.
Having a hard time staying in these games. Yeah.
Shamit, who I privately call Lance. It's a Friday Night Lights joke. For those who watch Lance Shamit, he really came through.
I thought. Yeah, it's a couple of moments for sure.
Well, yeah. I think what I would like as a Nets follower is you to direct your energy towards Joe Harris, because Joe needs the positive energy at this point.
Love energy, yeah.
And it's a really sad save.
I know, but Joe Harris he wears Mariners hats, which I like. Mm. But
right?
I mean,
yeah, he's a Washington guy, right?
Yeah. Looks like every guy I dated in my 20s. I can't. Yeah. I want him to be like, you know, competent. So he looks so sad. Harden was throwing him pity passes. Sad. You know, and I was like, oh, God.
I got to say, it is hard to be a role player on the Nets because there is like there's a very low bar for KD, Kyrie and Harden. They just don't accept any bullshit anymore at this point. Like Brian and I have cataloged the DeAndre Jordan saga. Like, this guy was riding high. He was one of the three amigos. And now he's wearing like resistance bands on the sidelines during games.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
Like, he just wants to play, but he actually, maybe he doesn't really want to play. I don't know anymore.
I want him to be like a Taco Fall at some point,
right?
But we're not in that territory.
And that's really prime DeAndre. He wants that for himself too. That's all he wants. He wants a chant for DeAndre to come out of the tunnel. Just like everybody.
You know what I want? I want him to do like a Thanasis Antetokounmpo imitation. Like, I want him to like running off the bench, coming in, fouling Giannis, and then running back off the floor.
I'm out on him.
Anyway, so Mina Kimes, thank you so much. I appreciate you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. Go Nets.
Let's do this. Nets and six. Lock it up. Get out of here.
Seven, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.